Actually, I'm very glad to be back to California because it's, in a sense, this is a place where, for me, everything started several decades ago when I was a postdoc with Walter Cohn, and I got introduced to the excitonic insulator together with Maurice Rice. And actually, history shows that the excitonic insulator may have something to do with what we've got in the organics. Of course, not superconductivity, but at least I would say that the spin density wave is nothing but an excitonic insulator. So today, I just wanted to, well, Antoine asked me also to give you a very brief introduction to the Bezgard salt. I think I should not be in the beam, so well, no. That's not. Is it okay if I sit here? Yeah, I'm here. Okay. Besides a very brief introduction to this rather strange material that not so many people know, actually, they are less, maybe less known than the ITCs. I wish to maybe try to tell you where we are now and in this kind of physics. Not so much about superconductivity, but all the normal, so-called normal stage, which give rise to superconductivity, because they are far from normal, as you will see. The first compound to show superconductivity in organic matter, that was decades ago, are actually the 1D, one-dimensional conductors. They were also the first low-dimensional material to reveal spin density waves. Okay, let alone chromium, which is not a low-dimensional material. They were showing sliding spin density wave, magnetic field-induced spin density, and this was really a new phenomenon. I will not discuss about that. I guess Victor must have talked about that a lot here. No. Bulk quantized Hall effect, that was really also quite fascinating. They were among the first, not really the first, to show spin pairs transition. They had a very new phenomenon studied by the Princeton group, the angular dependent magnetoresistance. Now they are recently discovered in UCLA, the charge ordering in the insulating state. I guess, or we guess, that the superconductivity is very exotic in this material, but this is still a subject of under discussion, very, very heavy discussion. And as they are one-dimensional material, non-Fermi liquid behavior is expected, and especially the key point, it is the spin and charge separation, which should be there. Most of the 1D materials which are known now, the organic 1D, are based on just a single molecule, the fulvalin molecular skeleton. And actually, this is the same skeleton which enters a lot of diversified molecule, as we see. So the well-known is actually it was first the Bezgard family, but it extended to the Fabre family, as you will see the reason why it is. And the so-called TMTSCF, TMTTF, actually TMTSCF is a Bezgard molecule and TMTTF is a Fabre molecule. And X is an ion. The main advantage of this really very broad series is that they built an isostructural system. So you don't have to worry very much about the structure. It's the same structure, just the lattice parameter is changing, but that's all. And the fact that they have a 1D, very strong 1D, one-dimensional structure induces also one-dimensionality on the electronic properties. And the key experiment, I think, because this is how the whole thing started, is that they are extremely sensitive to high pressure. And this is how organic superconductivity was first found. It was under pressure, and then ultimately it was found at zero pressure with different compound. And what is, I think, extremely important before touching superconductivity is need to study the parent compound, the background which give rise to superconductivity. So this is essentially what I will do today. Brief introduction of this Bezgard molecule that probably all of you have heard of maybe know. This is the famous TMTSCF molecule, which is a molecule which likes to donate easily an electron whenever it is possible. And the yellow dots are selenium molecule, and the orange dots are carbon atom. And you see, it is actually it's some kind of a benzene ring, but it's a full valent, two full valent ring. You have a full valent molecule here, and this is the HOMO of this molecule, the highest occupied molecular orbital of this molecule. Now, when you try to make a crystal out of this molecule, they pack very nicely in a stack of organic molecule, and you see there is some overlap between the HOMOs, a rather strong overlap between the HOMO, and actually the transverse overlap is negligible. So this is why they are called one-dimensional conductors whenever they conduct. Now you have the anion, which are here. The anion, it's a mono anion. It could be PF6 perchlorate, and the anion is just removing one electron every two molecules. So which means that you have half a whole pair organic cation molecule. Each cation here is charged by half a hole, not one hole exactly. So you have only half. So since it is a partly filled band system, you could expect to have a conductors in terms of the very classical theory of solids. And since it is a one-dimensional, the electron is moving along this direction, or the holes, sorry, are moving, you expect to have also some Luttinger physics, not Fermi liquid physics. Just the band structure is actually very simple. This is the band structure. It's a triclinic system. And as you see, the Fermi surface has two sheets which are separated, well, roughly speaking, by the vector 2kF, because we have a one-dimensional system, and a slight warping because you have some transverse coupling which makes the Fermi surface non-flat, not exactly flat. And there are actually some nesting vector for this Fermi surface, which is the 2kF, which is a tilted vector with the component 2kF along the longitudinal axis, which is the gamma x direction. So there are some possibility of nesting. For example, this is a possible nesting vector, which I showed here. So this is going to make the system very unstable against instability with the wave vector corresponding to the nesting vector of the Fermi surface. So just a drop of chemistry. I'm not a chemist, so I learned from my colleagues just how to make this material. It's quite interesting to, well, it's somewhat interesting because it's a procedure which has been invented by Klaus Beckgaard, nearly 25 years ago. It's just an electrochemical oxidation, the TMTSCF neutral. You remove one electron and it becomes a radical here, a stable radical, and combine with the PF6, and then with PF6 and makes an insoluble salt at the anode, which is your precipitate, because the salt itself is not soluble in the solvent. And so you can make like that. So this is well described in various review papers. And you see, you can make extremely nice crystal. I have actually a slide. I have a small movie for the crystallization. Maybe if there is any time left, I would at the end, I can show you the movie of the crystal growing, because it's quite fascinating to see how they grow from on this electrode. I just want to be, we have been very lucky that this techniques to make crystal is self-selective. In a sense, it selects only, the crystal grows only when it is very pure. So this is why we have been extremely lucky to find superconductivity, because we know that this superconductivity is extremely sensitive to defects. So if it were not for the techniques which is really selecting the best crystal, we could not find superconductivity. So this is really the trick that in which Bechgard was extremely successful. Just a reminder, the Landau Fermi liquid, there is no need to remind that that you have the concept of quasi-particle in the Landau Fermi liquid, and then you expect a jump in the distribution of quasi-particle at the Fermi wave vector, maybe not unity, but a little bit smaller, but a finite jump, and you have a finite quasi-particle weight, and then you have, you may have collective mode, and you can define an effective mass for this quasi-particle. So just also in case of Luttinger liquid, the quasi-particle actually, they become the collective modes. They have collective mode for the spin and collective mode for the charge. And the quasi-particle, the density of state for the quasi-particle is now as a depression at the Fermi level. And there is a power law. It's a kind of, not a V-shape, but let's say something like a power, it's a power law, something like a parabolic law, which goes like the exponent t to the theta. Sometimes I call it alpha, so that this is the exponent of this quasi-particle density of state here. And in turn, the Fermi distribution has no longer a jump at the Fermi wave vector, but they have just a power law behavior like that around Kf, and with no finite jump. So there is actually, in principle, at zero temperature, no quasi-particle at the Fermi level. Of course, we will never work exactly at zero temperature. So in terms of single particle correlation, the Green function is dependent as a special dependence with the exponent theta here. And the two-particle correlation, something, for example, the spin-density wave correlation or superconducting correlation, which is here the spin-density wave, is also revealing the same power law behavior in real space. And in terms of the susceptibility at wave vector 2kF, which is temperature dependent, you have this power law t to the minus gamma. And well, gamma is actually related to the exponent k rho. The k rho, so usually we work with k rho instead of gamma in most of the transport experiment. And the relation between the exponent of the quasi-particle density of state and k rho, which is a famous relation here that we will use all over the talk. The main advantage of this formulation here is that you expect you have no long-range order at zero temperature, as it should, because you have a one-dimensional system. But then you have all correlation functions are varying like power laws. I want to show you one exception, and then I will go to the Bechgard salt, of an old system that we know, which may be a true Luttinger liquid. And I think you will understand later why I see a true Luttinger liquid. This is a system which was discovered by TTF and nickel damit 2. So this is a molecule, okay, the slide is not extremely good, which is an acceptor molecule, the nickel damit. So you have a nickel in the middle, and they have two something like full valent group surrounding the nickel. So this is forming actually layers, and well, you have also stacks of this nickel damit molecule. The TTF is not shown, but the main difference with the salt, which I'm going to discuss later, is that the distance between the HOMO and the LUMO of this nickel damit molecule, the distance here in energy, is very small, or it is of the order of the dispersion of each band, whether it's the LUMO or the HOMO, which means that you have a crossing of the Fermi level is actually sitting in, is crossing both the HOMO and the LUMO. And of course, I have not shown here the band structure of the TTF, which has an inverted band structure, the inverted curvature, which is like that. So this system, in a sense, is a non-commensurate band field system. And it's one of the very few that we know which is not commensurate, because the Fabre and Bechgard salt have a commensurate filling, which is either 1/2 or 1/4. So it's a very one-dimensional electronic compound. You have the overlap of the homologo band, and the non-commensurate filling. You see the filling is of the order of 0.76. So this is a band filling, so this is non-commensurate. Actually, you have a development of a charge density wave on the nickel-dimit chain at 40 Kelvin, and all other bands remain metallic at low temperature. The transport and the NMR have shown that we may have a case for a metallic Luttinger chain in this system. And if you look at the transport, the resistivity is following a kind of power law with T to the 1.65, and this is at the constant pressure, and we'll see in a moment that it is important to convert to constant volume if you want to compare it with the theory. And it will give roughly rise to a resistivity which is linear in temperature. This is, I'm sure, very interesting that we should eventually go back to, because it is a unique system where you have a non-commensurate band filling, so you expect the Luttinger effect. So in terms of the spin sector, in the Luttinger liquid, you can probe the spin sector by NMR, and the NMR has actually two contributions. The nuclear relaxation rate has two, which is induced by the hyperfine coupling with the electron, has two contributions. There is a first contribution which goes like T to the chi square, chi being the susceptibility. It is related to the uniform susceptibility, Q equals zero susceptibility. And then you have the other kind of excitation, which are more the antiferromagnetic excitation, which is a staggered antiferromagnetic contribution, which goes like T to the K rho. So the exponent, K rho, is revealed by this second contribution. The prediction for a Luttinger liquid is this one. At high temperature, you have the dominant contribution are the ferromagnetic contributions, so T to the chi square, which chi being temperature dependent, of course, here. And at low temperature, you go like T to the K rho, because this contribution will go to zero, so you are left with T to the K rho, so you expect something which is some kind of S shape. This is, of course, if you had the Fermi liquid behavior, you would expect a straight line in temperature, which is a famous Schrödinger law. So I discussed that because in the nickel-dimit system, that when we measured the relaxation rate, this is here shown the relaxation rate, you see that all the way down to low temperature, there is a behavior here at low temperature which is very reminiscent of what we expect in the theory. And if you compare with the theory, you can derive an exponent K rho in that case from this behavior. And the exponent K rho is given by the experiment would be 0.4. So much for this material, which was studied a long time ago, and back to the Bechgard salt.
Which other measurements have been done on this nickel system?
Very little, actually. They give rise to superconductivity, but only under a slight pressure of 6 kilobar. Well, no, the crystal were rather bad. Actually, it will really be worth trying to convince chemists to come back to this system, which is of a unique, partly filled band material. Because we'll see that now we will have always the problem of the commensurate filling with this material.
Transport
has been measured, of course. This is how our superconductivity has been revealed. Yeah, transport and magnetoresistance.
Including the other than the, but no,
it's a good point, but no. The main importance, well, the main problem with the Bechgard salt is that they have half a hole per organic molecule, and also the system is slightly dimerized. By dimerized, you have an alternation of short intermolecular distance, long and short. So there is a slight dimerization, And this is really the signature of the Fabre-Bechgard families. So when I say that they are, in terms of chemistry, since you have a half a hole per organic molecule, they should be quarter filled. But if you take into account the dimerization, they would become half filled. So in that case, for this material, this is a diagram which is rather well known, which gives most of the physics of this material, which has been established more than 10 years ago already. So this is a diagram where you can compare all kind of materials, starting from the Fabre salt, and this is the Bechgard salt, which is here, which is a diagram which is combining chemistry and high pressure studies. I mean that if you take this compound here, if you put a high enough pressure of the order of, let's say, 40, 50 kilobar, you can make it superconducting. Whereas the zero pressure, starting point for the Bechgard salt is here at zero pressure, and only a pressure of 9 kilobar is enough to make it superconducting. So you have some equivalence between chemistry and pressure. This is where we started, actually, in 79. So now we extended the diagram both sides, and also on the side of the negative pressure. So we shall be essentially concerned by the non-long-range ordered state, the state which are, well, to study the phases which are at high temperature, because on the left side of the diagram, these materials are insulating, and progressively they become metallic as you go towards the right, and eventually they become superconducting as you cool.
What is SP
stand for? What is, sorry? SP is spin pyro. Oh, yeah. I should, I'm not going to talk about that today. This is a state which is a spin pyro state, and this is, there is here a spin density wave state, and this is a superconducting state. So these are three-dimensional ordered state, and they occur only at, you see, relative low temperature, below 20 Kelvin. So it's a log scaling temperature. So back to the dimerization problem. All compounds in the Fabre-Bechgard series, they have a center of symmetry between the molecule. Here you have a center of symmetry. Here you have also a center of symmetry. So stack the dimerization, here it's strongly exaggerated, the dimerization. You have a long distance, short distance, is thus allowed. So you have, instead of the quarter field from chemistry, you have a half field system. And then, since you have a dimerization, you have a gap which is opening at the center of the band. So this system, so this is an unfolded band picture. So you have the band here becomes half filled because of dimerization. And it was believed in 82, and especially it was triggered by Emery and Barizic and Brazovsky's work, that when the dimerization is strong, when delta, the D1 minus D2, is strong, let's say in this sulfur salt here, TMTTF is a sulfur salt, and this TMTTF is a selenium salt, the strong belief was a long time ago that The stronger the dimerization, the more insulating is the salt. So here I put the smaller dimerization means stronger metallicity, which is the same. And the reason for that was is that we believed that the Umklapp scattering of electrons, the half-field Umklapp scattering, was responsible for the localized behavior. That was believed a long time ago. And then, in the meantime, it was argued by people like Thierry Jamarchi, Antoine Georges, I think, also argued that. But essentially, Thierry first argued that it was probably not true, and that the commensurate, that the relevant Umklapp scattering could still be the quarter field Umklapp scattering. So, when you talk in terms of renormalization flow, where G3 is an Umklapp interaction, G3 is going to give rise to a Mott localization whenever it exists. So In the diagram G free versus K rho, which is the exponent of this power law, you have this flow, and if K rho is smaller, K rho unity means no interaction, so K rho on the left means that you have repulsive interaction. As soon as you have weak repulsive interaction, you end up with a strong coupling limit where G free is actually increasing. This is the Umlaut ring, and then you have the mod state. Whenever the interaction is repulsive, the critical K rho for the mod state would be unity when commensurability is 2. This is as shown here. Now, if you have a quarter field band, so the commensurability being 4, the critical K rho is going to be 1/4. Which means that you need more repulsive interaction to achieve the insulating state. And we shall see that it is actually the case for the Bechgard salt. This is really the second case which prevails, and not the first one, which was not so trivial, obvious, let's say, 10 years ago. The reason for that is, no, before I talk about that, I just want to show exactly what the spin charge separation means for experimentalists. So this is the behavior of the resistivity for the whole series of materials, starting from the most insulating one, showing localization below a certain temperature, which is around room temperature. And you have less insulating in terms of localization, which rises at lower temperature. And finally, you have the Bechgard salt at ambient pressure, which is showing a spin density wave state. We have, this is not a spin density wave state, it is a mod localization. You have a spin density wave state, and which opens gaps on the Fermi surface. So this is why it becomes insulating. And then finally, you have the only salt which is metallic all the way down to low temperature is the perchlorate, which is showing superconductivity without pressure. Of course, if you apply pressure, you can make this TMTTF salt look like the perchlorate salt, provided the pressure is large enough. So you see, you have a variety of dependence for the charge degrees of freedom, depending on whether you have a Fabre salt or a Bechgard salt. Now, if you look at susceptibility, they always look the same. Susceptibility is slightly decreasing, losing about 40%. And finally, you have a low temperature ordering, some kind of ordering, whether it's spin pyres or spin density wave. But don't pay attention to the low temperature part. The spin susceptibility is not characteristic of one of these salts. It's just the same for all these salts. So it means that the spin degrees of freedom are totally decoupled from the charge. And there is actually, so that was a basic experiment, and there is a very recent experiment that maybe some of you know. This was done by the Cologne group. Is it Cologne? Lorenz and Freimuth. It's not the Lorenz number, but it is the Freimuth. I'm not sure it's in Cologne or is it? It is in Cologne, yeah. And they did a really nice experiment, which is a full proof that I think, for me, that it is, you have a spin charge separation, is that they look at the thermal conductivity. Thermal conductivity in, this is the most insulating system, the TMTTF. The thermal conductivity, which is showing there is a phonon peak at low temperature, and then it's going down, and then it's going up all the way. You have a very large thermal conductivity at room temperature. This material being totally insulating at low temperature. You have exactly the same behavior of the perchlorate salt, which is exactly the same behavior, but this salt is a very good conductor at high temperature. So you see that if now you try to look what is the conductivity which is carried by the charge carrier, you end up with an extremely small value of the charge conductivity, the charge induced thermal conductivity. Is here. Here you have no carrier, so you have no charge-induced conductivity. And there, the conclusion was that the heat, which is shown here, and where here, see, it's just the same in both compounds, is carried by the spin fluctuation. So you have another observation, very clear-cut observation of the spin-charge separation in this material. It doesn't tell more than susceptibility, but it's a nice experiment which had to be done, and they did it. In the spin sector, back to a little bit what you expect from NMR, when you are in the presence of a charge gap, which means that K rho goes to zero, you have a strong coupling insulator, the T1 is not going to look like what I've shown before with the T to the K rho low, but it will end up with a finite value corresponding to K rho. This is what you expect in a one-dimensional antiferromagnet. The T1 inverse should go to a finite value, and at high temperature, of course, it is the same. This is the case of the spin of the spin lattice relaxation of the MOT insulator. You see, so this is the same formula with the two contributions, and then you have a constant term because K rho is zero in the case of strong MOT insulator, and this is what you would expect. And this is actually, this was observed in the strongly insulating material when you end up with a, at low temperature with a MOT insulator. The T1 inverse is hitting the zero temperature curve, so this is T1 inverse versus temperature times chi square. So in that case, if you do that, as you can see here, you expect a linear plot, and when the extrapolation hit the zero temperature line at the finite value, and this is actually what you have for the strongly insulating material. And the antiferromagnetic part is much less when you take a less insulating material. You have the extrapolation from the high temperature is actually zero. In the selenium salt, the extrapolation is zero because you have a very strong, you have a very weak antiferromagnetic, much weaker antiferromagnetic contribution to the relaxation rate. So there was a lot of study of NMR on time ago. Also, there is the signature that this material our MOT insulator is from optical behavior. The optical behavior of the sulfur compound, the one which are on the left of the diagram, have conductivity showing a far infrared gap, and at high temperature, it decays. And the decay is actually following a law which was calculated by Thierry, some time ago, which reveals also the exponent of the one-dimensional physics. So the exponent is actually non-universal. It's for a quarter-field system, it would be 16 K rho minus 5. So once you know that experimentally, you can come back to K rho, which is of the order of 0.23. And it is not so bad because 0.23 is slightly on the insulating side of the MOT insulator. So it means that you have a gap, you have a MOT insulating state, but you are not very far in the strong coupling limit. All this study where actually you've probably had the same slide from Leo Di Giorgi some time ago, because I'm not going to talk about the zero frequency peak yet. So the gap in the selenium, in the sulfur compound, the charge gap, yet you can measure here, this is the red line, is always of the order of 500 to 1000 Kelvin. But you still have, even in the selenium compound, the one which gives rise to superconductivity, you still have a charge gap which is 120 or 200 Kelvin. So this is still there, even though this material becomes superconducting at low temperature. So it means that the normal state are really far from being normal because you have a far infrared gap. So now we'll take a small guided tour through this this series, starting from here and ending here. Probably I will end Thursday at this region where you have phase segregation, and if I have time, I will try to make several stops in between, going from the insulating side to superconductivity. And our first stop is to show that this material should be considered as quarter field material. The reason for that is again given by our friend chemists. Can we make a genuine quarter field 1D conductor and yet have a strong localization? Because in the idea of Emery about 20 years ago, where the localization was due to the dimerization, we would expect when you have no dimerization, we should expect no localization. And this happens to be wrong for this series, because we shall see that we can make a quaterfield material thanks to a special molecule which is totally non-symmetric. It's an amide molecule. As you can see, there is no symmetry whatsoever in this molecule. This is because they have this radical here, amide system, dimethyl amide. This was recently elaborated by the group of Bataille in France, in Angers. And this molecule, they have the good idea to stack, very much like the Bechgar salt. I've shown here only this stacking of the organic molecule. Of course, there is a counter ion, which is there just to charge the system, but it has no importance. And as the stacking is actually uniform, as for symmetry consideration, which I will tell you in the next slide. But when you calculate the band structure, the Fermi surface is far from being flat. So this is, you have a large interchain coupling in this material, and the band is rather narrow because the bandwidth is of the order of 0.3 eV. So you are in a situation where, in terms of a Harbin model, U over W would be larger than unity. So it's a strongly coupled system. But what is important, and this is unique in this new material, that you have an additional symmetry, that you have a glide plane symmetry, which gives rise to no dimerization. So the next slide is showing that. So this is not so trivial because of the, in red, this is an oxygen atom. So you go from this molecule here to the one floor up here, you have a translation, and you make a symmetry with respect to a plane, which is shown here in red, although it's not a plane, but you make a symmetry with respect to the plane, and so on. So on this stack, all the oxygen are pointing forward, as you can see here, whereas on the neighboring stack, all oxygen are pointing backwards. As a result, you have no inversion center between the molecule, which you had for the Bechgar salt. It's a monoclinic unit cell, and as a result of all this thing, you cannot have a dimerization between the molecules. So by symmetry, by construction, it is a quaterfield system. And this is important because when you look, this is a stacking, when you look along the stacking, the way you have a kind of crisscross stacking of the molecule. But if you calculate, of course, if you calculate the band structure, you see that here, at this Z point, you have no gap, whereas in the Bechgar system, you will have a gap due to the dimerization. Here, you have no gap. This was calculation by Canadel. And yet, when you look at the transport properties, this is an Arrhenius plot. So these are the raw data. This is not calculated whatsoever. It is resistivity versus inverse temperature. And at one bar, the system is highly insulating. The gap from transport is 2,700 Kelvin, which is far above any gap known for the Bechgar series. So this system is strongly localizing. As you apply pressure, the slope here is decreasing, and finally you have a metallic behavior above, let's say, 25 kilobar. So it follows the same trends as the Bechgar salt, with the only difference that you are starting from a highly localizing material, even though it's a it's a quaterfield material by construction. So you have a very large gap, and the gap is given in terms of K rho by this kind of expression, where G 1/2 N is actually the Umklapp scattering, N is unity for half field band and 2 for quarter field band. So, and you have an exponential dependence on K rho. So once we know the gap itself from experiment, you can have an idea of what K rho should be if you know W. But W, you have a very not bad approach from W by the band structure, the Bayes-Hückel band structure calculation. In case of Hafil-Hunklapp, G one half is actually the Hubbard U times the dimerization gap divided by W. So if dimerization is rather small compared to W, you have a very strong reduction of U for the half field. The quarter field gap, it's not the same thing. You have U again, but the U over W. And if U over W is order of unity, or even if it's even larger than unity, you see that the quarter field Hunklapp could have a matrix element which is stronger than the half field Hunklapp. Although it's a higher order term, the matrix element could be stronger. And this is why we think in this material, the Hunklapp scattering, although it's a quarter field, is stronger than a half field. In the case of quarter field, if you take this formula, you have this relation. And we have fitted all these curves by this relation, making this quarter field assumption. And then we get the K rho, which is pressure dependent, the K rho, starting from 0.2 and reaching under 25 kilobar, where we are in the region where the system looks like the Fabre Bechgard material. We are reaching the K rho of 0.23. So even though this is a very rough approach to the gap, we get non-stupid result for the values of K rho. So this is a very interesting, and we make an assumption that we know from optics already, but there are very, very few optical work on the pressure. I'm very sorry about that. We have to go back to very early work. We know the pressure dependence of the bandwidth from optics, and we plugged in order to get the comparison with the experiment. So this is K rho is increasing. Of course, we are starting from a rather strong coupling limit, and we are weakening the coupling as we increase pressure.
This is in a system which is dimerized, right?
This is not dimerized. It's exactly the point. This is the main interest. This is really the main interest of this system, that you cannot argue that it is dimerized because you have this glide plane symmetry which prevents dimerization. Okay. And that was the first compound which has a glide plane symmetry and gave rise to a monoclinic.
And what
is D? D is a dimerization gap whenever it exists. Dimerization gap. The gap. It's zero here.
Okay.
So you are left with only the quarter field, and yet it is a strongly localized material. It means something that for a theoretician, that you should work with a quarter field band system and not a half field. That's clear. No, it's a very simple system. This
but way. These formulas for G, I have the impression that they're perturbative in U. Those are only valid when U is much less than W, you know?
Yeah, I think that maybe I'm slightly exaggerating when I say it's valid for U. Yeah, I agree.
True.
That's true. All right. Susceptibility is fascinating. Maybe fascinating. Is it still work on the... When you look at susceptibility, it behaves. You have some kind of a Bonne-Fischer behavior at high temperature. This is both this squid susceptibility and the EPR susceptibility. But at 30 Kelvin, you have a drop of susceptibility, which we think, okay, quite naturally, it should be a formation of a spin piles system. And you have a singlet spin singlet system. But apparently, in most of the sample, in so far all sample, the susceptibility does not go to zero exactly. So you are left with a singlet state, spin singlet state with a non-zero. And all spin pyol systems that we know till now, that we knew until now, were actually susceptibility was really going to zero. So this is with our avenue. And so this is really open to discussion. I think that maybe what we could have a very unique situation here. At high temperature, system is localized. High, I mean above 30 Kelvin when you have the 3D ordering. And you have the so-called Mott localization, like let's say the 4KF Mott localization. And Then, in order to optimize the Coulomb repulsion between the charges here are here put in green, you have this kind of pattern, you know, not two charges just close to each other. So this is to optimize the Coulomb repulsion. And it may very well be.
So do you have long range order or?
No. It's a one-dimensional material. So we have no long-range order.
Yeah.
No long-range order.
Power or charge density wave?
No, we have no charge density wave whatsoever. No.
It looks like charge.
Yeah, but it's a cartoon. It should not be long-range order exactly. But then, you could expect long-range order at low temperature. And at low temperature, maybe usually what you have the formation of dimer within each chain. So you have a dimerization taking place, which is a spin, the spin pi-Hulse dimerization for spin and also for the lattice. Here, we may have some formation of dimer, which are actually some kind of zigzag dimer between the chain. And then we may have some kind of phase separation, that some zigzag dimer where you have the zig and here you have the zags, and in between the zig and the zag you are left with the Heisenberg chain, which is not dimerized, which does not enter any dimer, and then would give rise to a finite susceptibility at low temperature. You have a lonely Heisenberg chain, so you have domains. And in between, you may have this possibility, because maybe the lattice dimerization is very difficult to achieve because of the lattice is very robust, and maybe we would not like to make a distortion, intra-chain distortion, but would have. Anyway, we may have in this material formation of spin singlet, but not necessarily within each chain. But this is still open to, let's say, to discussion. But this is a rather unique system where the spin pi-Hulse behave strangely. Now we move towards the lab and we look at the Mott-Luttinger liquid crossover. We are here, and we will get out of the Mott state and enter something which will be more metallic. So that was very well known. This is very well known here, actually, because the theoretician did work a lot, especially Silke Biermann in Antoine George's group last year, a year before also. And they were just mapping system of coupled chain with electron interaction on an effective one chain problem with an effective medium. And they have a self-consistent condition, and this is the DMFT formulation. And there is a very clear prediction of this theory, is that you must have a first crossover where this is a temperature T perpendicular diagram, transverse interaction. You have the Mott insulating state, and as you increase the transverse coupling from zero, when you hit a value of transverse coupling, which is, let's say, of the order of the Mott gap, you should enter a Luttinger liquid. So it's no longer a Mott state. So there is a first crossover which corresponds to a deconfinement of the 1D Mott state into the Luttinger liquid. And this, they have done the calculation for half field band model, so they should probably do it for a quarter field band model as well. And you see, you start from a very strong coupling, K rho is zero, and then you progressively increase the value to a Luttinger liquid with weak interaction. So you have this transition region, which is the crossover. So this is so much for the theory, and I think they could tell you much more. And again, I want to show you that this is probably valid. Studying a compound which is a very one-dimensional by construction. I mean, there is no transverse coupling in this compound, in which the transverse coupling is minimized, and we'll see how it will respond to high pressure. because the increase of T perpendicular in the theory should be related to, let's say, to a pressure increase of T perpendicular. But in this compound, I'm going to tell you, by in abbreviation, it's, I call it TTDM. It's a, again, chemists have long names, but I thought it's a special compound, purely 1D in let's say nearly purely 1D in structure. This is built out of again a non-symmetric molecule here. And I've shown here the pi electron density. Whether it's dark or white is just a sign of the HOMO of this molecule. And as you can see, this molecule in terms of electron density is highly non-symmetric. So there is some electron density on this side, but no electron density on the other side. And in the packing, the molecule are actually, you have one molecule and the next molecule would be on the other direction. And if you look now at the transverse coupling here between the end carbon, you have a coupling from one carbon here with which on one stack, which has some pi electron, which is coupled to the short coupling, the short distance is to the other molecule, but you couple to the other carbon, there is no pi electron density. So it means that in this direction, there is no interchain transverse coupling. The red points are actually showing that there is no interchain coupling. Now, if you look in the other transverse direction, you have the anion molecule here, which are perpendicular, sitting perpendicular to the stacking axis, which is one you can see that here, and they are shielding the transverse coupling. So finally, you end up with a system where the band structure is shown here. You see in the transverse direction, the band is flat. So it is a system which is purely 1D. It is strongly dimerized, so you have a gap here, but otherwise it is only 1D by symmetry.
Theoretical calculation, or
no? This is a calculation from the band structure. It's theoretical calculation,
okay,
from the band structure.
How well is that dimerization gap obeyed in experiment?
The dimerization gap is actually seen on the structure, and then it's converted into a band gap.
But
the structure shows.
Optically, for example.
Sorry?
What's the number? How big is delta?
Well, you have the scale. You have the scale here. It's 10.2 goes to 9.6, 0.1, yeah, 0.1, about EV.
Okay, so is it seen, for example, in optics or in transport?
No. Well, it's not yet studied. You know, whether it was not studied. So it's a purely 1D, and again, this is quite different from the Bechgard salt, where we know there are some transverse coupling. Now, the response to pressure is quite interesting. This is a system which has a Mott insulating gap, but under pressure, it's very robust. The behavior is shown here, that even when you apply, so you start from a Mott gap which is 800 Kelvin, and then you hardly decrease it under pressure, very, very weakly. Even on the 25 kilobar, you are left with 700 Kelvin gap. Whereas if you take any of the Bechgard salt, you start even, for example, this one, which are about the same gap at ambient pressure, you see that you can decrease the gap very strongly. So it led us to think that in this system, you have a negligible pressure dependence of the Mott insulator, so it's very robust. So you are in a situation where the Mott gap is larger than the interchain coupling, because the interchain coupling is zero. So the only effect is the effect of pressure of the Mott gap of the, let's say, the intrachain. So this is a minimum. So in a sense, this is supporting the theory, which shows that you can the deconfinement from the Mott state to a, let's say, a metallic state is due to the transverse coupling. When you have no transverse coupling, you have a very robust Mott state. Now we are facing another crossover, which is, and I think today I will probably stop after this crossover and we leave this region for Thursday. This is the Luttinger liquid, Fermi liquid in quotation mark, crossover. And this is a fascinating system because we'll see that again, a group of Antoine predicted that when you are here in the Luttinger liquid situation, you will cross and another crossover, and then you have the formation of quasi-particle, let's say the crossover from no quasi-particle to quasi-particle, Fermi liquid. And they did the calculation for a doped Hilbert chain, and you see decreasing the temperature, again, the KO is going to increase, and this is the crossover region. This is going to be a dimensional crossover from Luttinger liquid to Fermi liquid. Well, you have this crossover even in non-interacting system. When you consider, let's say, a Fermi surface which is warped, if you work at high temperature, temperature larger than the warping, the thickness of the warping, you have let's say, a diffuse distribution of carriers, and you have the 1D effect. The nesting vector is 2kF 0, 0. But when you are at a temperature which is smaller than T perp, actually, you must tilt your nesting vector. The best nesting vector is tilted, and then even in the non-interacting picture, you have this. You could expect this crossover, but we are discussing interacting electrons. So, the phase diagram is going to reveal a new line here related to this crossover for the onset of quasi-particle. And I'm going to discuss this new line with very recent experiment. So a better knowledge of the interplay between the Mott localization, which is here on the left, and the crossover is clearly needed. And we are going to use a salt which requires a lot of pressure to be here. I think we are going to use the TMT-TFPF6. Because we want to minimize the effect of compressibility. You know, these materials are very sensitive to pressure. They are very compressible. And that this is also a nuisance, because it means that you, for a theoretician, when you study, let's say, the transport in temperature, you have to be careful that you work at constant volume. And what the experimentalists are measuring, they are measuring under constant pressure. So you must make a conversion of constant pressure to constant volume, which is not very direct. So this is the problem that we had when we work with a system which is here, and we want to study the pressure effect. The conversion has to be done. But if we work with a system which is, let's say, very much on the left and under pressure, this is much less important because compressibility is decreasing with pressure, and also the thermal contraction is also decreasing. So, which under pressure. So, this is the reason why we choose instead of the Bechgar salt, we choose the Fauer salt. Okay, at the expense of some pressure problem, of course, we have to work at. But then we have no need for conversion at constant volume. So we get a direct, we could possibly compare the experiment, a direct comparison with it. So we choose to study the longitudinal transport, but also the transverse transport. Transverse transport is illustrated here. Assuming that on one chain, you have the excitation are Rollons. But when you look at a transverse transport, the only thing which give rise to conductivity are going to be good electrons. So at some time, the Rollons is giving rise to an electron jumping to the neighboring chain, chain 2, leaving a hole propagating on chain 1, and then they propagate, and at certain time later, they come back, the electron is coming back to chain 1 and combined to the hole and forming the holon again. So the transport along C is known to be incoherent. It's known from optical data. So the transport along the C direction is actually probing the density of quasi-particle. It's, in a sense, it's much better than studying the transverse along the longitudinal direction. What is interesting, if you look at the Bechgard salt, the transverse resistivity is starting at ambient pressure, becoming, it's insulating, going for a maximum, and then becoming metallic-like, and finally you have the spin density wave transition. The important point that there is a maximum at T star here. If in the same temperature regime you look at the longitudinal resistivity, you have a behavior at constant pressure which is looking like that, metallic all the way down, T-square behavior at low temperature. But if you make the conversion here at constant volume, the longitudinal resistivity would look very much like linear at high temperature. T star is of the order of 120 Kelvin, and we attributed T star to the crossover between a Luttinger behavior at high temperature and Fermi liquid at low temperature. The theory, so there have been actually a little bit some controversy about the theory, and now I believe that probably the theory which has been given by Antoine is probably more exact than the one that we gave earlier, that the transverse resistivity is revealing the quasi-particle exponent, so it goes like T to the 1 minus 2 alpha in the Luttinger liquid. And this is a Kubo formalism where A is the spectral density of quasi-particle, the one-dimensional spectral density. So that was published. And if you look at the transverse, if you try to you fit this behavior here, we could reach some value for K rho because alpha is related to K rho. And the longitudinal resistivity is also sensitive, has also a power law in this regime here. So T is roughly linear. You end up with a K rho, which is again of the order of 0.23, in agreement with the optical data. But there is still a problem, is that this material, you have this correction to make between a constant pressure and constant volume. So in the low temperature regime, rho A is more Fermi-like, T square, and rho C is still incoherent. And I think this is just the Weger's law, actually, that rho C should be proportional to the longitudinal scattering rate. So rho C, assuming that the conductivity along A and B are actually both Fermi liquid, you have the square root of rho A, rho B, so you expect a metallic behavior, even though the absolute value of the conductivity of the resistivity is decayed above the Mott limit. So it's a metallic behavior, but you have the absolute value which is a lot higher than the Mott limit because the rho C is incoherent. So let me drop this part and go now to the very recent data. This was this compound where we studied the rho C. Starting from 1 bar, or going all the way to 25 kilobar, you see this compound needs no constant volume conversion, except maybe in the low pressure regime, but certainly in the high pressure regime. And you see, as you increase pressure, you have an activated behavior, clearly due to the Mott localization. And you see the appearance of the maximum of resistivity, and finally at low temperature, you have the spin density wave state taking occurring at low temperature. The maximum, the temperature of the maximum is moving up under pressure. So we are going to study the temperature regime to see whether we can fit the high temperature regime where the resistivity is actually insulating. Can we fit it with the Luttinger liquid formula that you have shown the previous slide, or is it stupid? So we'll do that, and when we do that, we realize that it is stupid to use the Luttinger liquid power law, because if you do that, if you fit it by the T to the 1 minus 2 alpha law, you get an alpha which is above unity, you get a very large alpha, which makes no sense. The K-rho would be zero. And that's a bit stupid when you do that in this region.
So what's on the y-axis again in this graph? What are you plotting?
OK, I'm plotting in this graph the mod gap versus pressure, which is derived from the transverse resistivity under pressure. And I'm using, instead of the Luttinger liquid formula, I claim that rho c is essentially dominated by the mod gap, that the quasi-particle are actually dominated by the mod gap. And then I use, of course, an activation plot. And this is the value of delta when I use this plot from against the experimental data. In all this regime here, I get the value of delta, which is shown here as the blue points. And then the square, the open square, are actually the crossover between the mod behavior, the high temperature insulating behavior, and the metallic behavior at low temperature. As you can see here, the scale for the quasi-particle crossover is much lower than the scale of the mod gap. It's only when you go to very high pressure, then both scales are meeting, and then only at the highest pressure you can really you consider that you have a Luttinger metal, and you get an alpha of 0.85 if you use the Luttinger formulation with a KO of 0.2, which makes sense. And Luttinger formula would be here instead of activation, you see. So it means that when in rho c, you are always influenced by the mod gap, which is sitting behind you. And this is not what we believed before, and we have been forced by experiment to accept this picture. I know that Antoine was pushing it very much, but I think he was.
Which experiment allows you to obtain the crossover?
From the measurement of the crossover temperature is given by position, the temperature corresponding to the maximum. You see, from this pressure, you begin to see a maximum. Well, it's clear here. The maximum is moving in temperature as you increase pressure. This is the crossover, the quasi-particle crossover. Okay?
We can discuss that later. Okay. This is one crossover.
This is one.
Probably another one.
Yeah. Okay, another problem which, you know, this, I would say that the experiments are still on the press or on the pressure, which is not. We are studying now rho a. I just give you a preliminary. This was what was done on this same compound by Moser, a student, 4 years ago, and we are redoing everything now. And for example, on the same material, which I shown the rho c behavior before. The 19 kilobar, 20 or 19 kilobar, let's say it's about the same thing. Rho c is showing the maximum of this crossover, whereas rho a is showing no maximum. Rho a has a metallic behavior. So it means that you can have a very different behavior for transport along the chain and transport transverse to the chain. But rho c gives rather good measure of the mod gap. And you don't have access to the mod gap when you measure rho a. That's still a problem left for the future. So the exotic Fermi liquid, I think I will stop here. The next time I will discuss that this Fermi liquid, we are now the crossover is in this region and very strongly pressure dependent, as you have seen. We are entering the Fermi liquid, but as we shall see, we are very far from a very classical Drude-like Fermi liquid. And we discuss next time the exotic Fermi liquid, and I will also spend time on this region here, showing that you have a phase segregation taking place between antiferromagnetic region and superconducting region. This is very clearly shown now by transport. And I would also extend the same idea to new data that we have obtained with V2O3, which behaves exactly the same. The competition between antiferromagnetism and superconductivity is also revealing a very broad pressure regime where you have phase separation, a phase separation regime.
You have V2O3
superconducting? V2O3, we were looking for that because nobody has looked, and V2O3 is not superconducting. Down to, well, it could have been, why not? And now we can tell you that down to 50 milli-K, V2O3 is not superconducting. It's quite unfortunate. It's one of the very few compounds which are not superconducting. But yet, it's still interesting. So, I maybe just summarize what I told you today, and essentially what I told you today is that the Farber-Bechgarn salt, which are commensurate, should be considered as a quarter-fill material, which is really pertinent for localization. We have a U over W, let's say, of the order of unity. And not, well, there are the half filling is not pertinent, actually. Transverse coupling is very relevant. If you want to kill, to suppress the Mott-insulating state, you need a transverse coupling, because I gave you the example of a material where you have no transverse coupling and you cannot suppress the Mott state. It was just the opposite. That the repulsive Luttinger liquid properties are probably barely visible at high temperature in transport. You know, you are very much influenced by the background of the Mott state, and I have not discussed yet this 2D exotic Fermi liquid, which is going to be stabilized by the transverse coupling, and so. But we shall see the next time. Okay, I think I should stop here. Took too much time.
This was all a theory, at least one orbital theory, right?
Yeah.
Is this justified by that the next orbital is at a distance larger than
U? It is really, yeah, because, you know, U is of the order of the bandwidth.
Yeah.
And then the next orbital are far away from that. No, I think on this point the theory is probably okay. No, it's a rather simple band structure, finally. But the problem is that you have interacting 1D electron, and that makes life more funny.
More questions? And concerned with the charge density waves, did you look that
in none of this compound you get charge density wave. You always get spin density wave. Mm-hmm. You get charge density wave only in systems like the old TTF, TCNQ, where you have incommensurate band filling. And actually, you also get charge density wave in the first compound which I discussed, this famous, the nickel-dimit compound, which is also incommensurate. But whenever you have a commensurate filling, half-filled, quarter-filled, you end up with spin density wave, unless the transverse coupling is strong enough to suppress the spin density wave state, and then you have superconductivity. Yeah, I forgot to tell you that all these materials, they eventually become superconducting, so under pressure. That's really the fate of all these materials under high pressure. And now, you don't get any charge density wave in the commensurate material.
The pressure is not hydrostatic somehow.
Pressure is hydrostatic.
Oh, but, I mean, you know, you get more...
Yeah, the pressure is hydrostatic. Now, what is the stress? Yeah, that's fine, but you always use... And that's the only way to go to very high degree of... to strain the crystal high enough without breaking it, is to put hydrostatic pressure. If you take uniaxial strain, you cannot put a lot of strain because you end up, you just break your system. So the price you have to pay to go to high degree, very high strain is to put hydrostatic pressure. The upper limit is of the order of, let's say, 50 kilobar. Yeah, I didn't mention some experiment well done a few years ago in Geneva, in the Institute of Physics, where they discovered, they made this TMTTF superconducting at 45 kilobar. They use a medium which is some kind of steatite medium. It's an alumina oxide, or, I don't know. It's nearly hydrostatic, so it's okay. You don't have to use liquid pressure. You could compromise with a solid medium. It goes two-dimensional, at least two-dimensional. Yeah. When you have superconductivity, your system becomes two-dimensionally coupled.